Hello, World Walkers. Yes, I'm talking to you. Welcome to World Talkers, an Evermore fan podcast. Lend us your ear, learn something new, and develop a mutual obsession. Goblins, dragons, charismatic executioners, and more await as we unravel the secrets that lay beyond the portal of Evermore.
Hi, everyone. This is Daniel coming to you live. At the time of recording this podcast, technically, it isn't actually going to be live when it hits your ears, but I am alive and speaking to you. I am joined today by three beautiful gentlemen who will introduce themselves now.
Hi, I'm one of those beautiful gentlemen. My name's Wyatt.
Hey guys, it is Chandler. I am the most beautiful of all, I'm going to say.
And this is Skylar. I am dead. And that's about it. So I'm actually coming to you dead.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Skylar. Why are you feeling that way, man? I mean, should we get into it here?
I'm just a ghost.
Oh, you're just a ghost. Cool, cool. Okay, but you will be joining us today more fully. You're not just going to be sitting there, right? You will be talking?
Yep, full talking, full interactions. That's basically all a ghost can do.
Oh, so. Cool. Sounds good. Glad to have you on the show.
Well, I'm very happy that at least 75% of us are alive for our discussion, for our Mythos review. We kind of want to talk about some of the like backbone things of Mythos. So things with the story, but as well, the stuff that makes Evermore a theme park itself. So the guest relations type of things, the merchandise, the food, and so on. So we have a lot of things to talk about today, so it should be a good one.
Yeah, we're going full throttle on this. We're seeing it from the whole point of view of a guest to Evermore Park during the Mythos season. Mythos 2019.
I mean, maybe just more than a guest, but like four super nerd guests who come almost weekly. So
yeah, we went at least once a week, if not more.
Yeah, for the amount of times that we went, that was a huge chunk of change, but we'll see today if it was worth it. Definitely, guys.
So to start things off, we want to talk a little bit about the story, not necessarily the aspects of the story as in what happened, but just the way the story felt while we were there in the park.
I would say just from the very beginning that Mythos came in swinging with the story. It was so story heavy, at least from my experience, and it's something that I absolutely loved. They seriously had taken what they learned and worked with what they had from lore and from Aurora and kind of meshed the two together. Definitely activity based and super story based as well. So much fun.
There was a lot of story, but also that you had some new mechanics, some new things that were there if you weren't going to go deep into the story, if you wanted to enjoy kind of the surface level story of the guilds, the mayoral election, which were amazing. You could still do that if that wasn't something you wanted to do or couldn't do. Maybe if you had little ones with you. Those were still really wonderful to interact with those guests, those characters.
So the story overall had a fairly solid structure, like taking from the things that they learned from lore and Aurora, and a lot of that shone through from the main quests and like the quest line that we were able to see kind of develop throughout the story of Mythos.
Well, when you say main quest, like I'm having struggles trying to figure out like what exactly the main quest was, because every single time I went out and did something for a character, I felt like it was the main quest. There was a level of sincerity and enthusiasm to every quest that I was given, so that it was kind of hard to differentiate like what was a serious main quest that was driving the whole plot along, or what was a side quest that was just driving a character along.
And to me, I think I would consider those character quests just as important, because it really adds to the world building and the world around you. I think definitely at first, in hindsight, it was kind of a little bit easier to pinpoint what maybe the quote-unquote main quests are and what the side quests were. I think side quests were just the things that helped with world buildings, and the main quests were actually just like you know, the barn fire or the burglary, the bigger, more obvious points that were happening and going on. And then everything else that was kind of more secret or hidden was definitely more of that kind of side quest. But it was difficult to tell kind of as we went through the season, at least for me, because there was that level of complexity and that level of depth. It just seemed as much as we wanted to keep digging, there was just more and more and more and more. And I love that. I love that. And I love that.
And I wonder how much that confusion is coming, why, because of how often we went, right? I wonder if it was really obvious to other people and maybe they didn't get as many side quests, right? We did go many times, and so we were able to experience a lot of the story, which won't be a surprise to anyone that's listened to us before. That's something that we really love and crave. And so it's, I wonder, you know, how much it was because of that.
Definitely think it was a factor. I also think that, like, one of the things about the main quests that made it difficult to figure out if it was a main quest or a side quest was the idea that because of our nature as avid park goers, we want information as soon as we hear something new. And sometimes when there was the burglary or the barn fire or a really big thing, we would ask and ask and ask about it, but there was an information stop because they couldn't just release everything the day they announced it, mm-hmm. right? So I think for us, it was kind of, or for me, maybe I'll just talk for myself here, there was this kind of like, well, is this a main quest because we can't find anything out more about it? It must not be super integral to the plot right now. Maybe I'll go do another thing that I actually can find out about. So maybe it was just the idea that, like, we went so often, we asked so many questions that we would just get roadblocked sometime, and then I'd be like, oh, maybe that's not what we need to ask or what we need to find out about right now.
But I do really appreciate that there was a lot of diversions in regards to that with these side quests or character building quests, because I can agree with the structure of the main quests in regards to only being able to release so much information at a time. I mean, it has some drawbacks, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but I think I can understand, like, you know, why do they do that? Because if you have the finale ready there to find for everyone to just know, guaranteed someone's going to break it like the first day or the first week, and then what do you do from there? So the main quests kind of have to have these information leaks later on, I guess, or layers added onto them. And I think that's why I really enjoyed these ones, is because it was like a crime investigation. So naturally, as time goes on, you discover more clues. And so it lended a natural progression to do those main quests in that regard and that structure.
And I wanted to agree with Skylar. I felt the same way. Just to me, it was like, oh, I guess I'm doing something else. Maybe this is the main quest, or this is the idea. But
yeah.
But as time went on and as information was released, I figured out which plots were more important, right? Which quests were actually the main quest.
Right. I totally see that. I definitely think that it was very interesting to see, kind of, as you mentioned, Skylar, these kind of layers or extra new bits of information. For example, we learned about the barn fire a couple weeks in, and we were still learning things about it months later at the end of the season, right? It still wasn't wrapped up. And so that was frustrating from a park goer, an avid park goer situation, or, you know, point of view. However, from someone that hadn't been there at the beginning, I wonder if that also was allowed them to be excited about this. Hey, like, oh, this is new information about this thing that happened 2-3 months ago. Oh, this is something I can still participate in. I do know from the fan community, sometimes people feel left out about and have that FOMO, the fear of missing out. And that, I think, was a really good way for them to say, you know what, it doesn't matter if you were able to come in 3 months ago and learn about this, or if you're just learning about this now, you can still help out, and it's still very much important and relevant to the plot today.
Yeah, and I think that comment right there that you're saying, Chandler, goes right back to what Skylar said at the very beginning. It's that combination of Aurora and lore, right? You have beautiful, wonderful layers of depth in lore, and then you have a kind of, not a rigid storyline, but a cohesive storyline that is being told in segments, right? And then you just kind of take those two worlds and put them together. And that was Mythos, that you had great layered story, but also there was information stops to make sure that everyone was on the same page. No one was going too far too fast.
Which can be frustrating, but I understand it. And we'll talk more about that later on.
We certainly will. And so we've talked about the main story, like line of quest, main quest line type of a deal, how that was kind of structured, kind of built by the park. But a lot of these side quests that we went out on felt like they were actually kind of built out by the players, by the park goers, by the world walkers, right? Which is something that I think is wholly unique to this type of experience at Evermore. Like, you know, you play Dungeons and Dragons, your DM is ultimately going to be the one dictating yes or no. And looking at the park, like they did have their checks and their balances with, oh, we'll allow this, we won't allow that. But overall, I would say that they were very willing to play along into the idea of what the World Walkers wanted to do, to engage with. Your guys' thoughts on that?
Yeah, I totally understand what you're talking about. I think a great example of this was Dimitri and Giordani, that combination that was happening. There was so much World Walker interaction with the Dimitri Giordani coupling that I wonder if they added story to that, if they went beyond what was happening. We got to talk a little bit to Bobby about the character, and it seemed that like this character kind of manifested out of a desire from World Walkers to explore this character.
And what was interesting is that it was something that was already written into the character way back in lore. And then it just manifested because some World Walkers approached him and did something. And he was like, oh, this is a perfect moment. Or the writers did. I don't know exactly how that communication works, but it was agreed upon by Evermore. Yeah, let's reward these guys by creating this quest line. Let's kick this off.
Right. I remember hearing from Bobby that they brought the idea of a phylactery, this kind of Horcrux type thing. And he was like, oh, like it's in Hebrew, the language of the slaves. And this World Walker just started talking Hebrew. And in that moment, he was like, okay, you've now done everything. You've flipped the switch and really given me the reins and the allowance to work with this and to reveal this amazing storyline that was very much a side quest that came out of the World Walkers interactions. And I agree, Dan, that's such a unique thing with Evermore that we can go in and change the story.
And I think that's a real, real like benefit of going frequently to the park. So the main quest that we kind of talk about and deduce is good for those who are not able to visit the park weekly, perhaps, in regards to the fact that they can catch up. They have time to catch up. But one of the benefits of going to the park frequently, the 22 plus times we went during Mythos, you get to know the characters and you get to influence the story of those characters and learn about their histories and their backstories. And they make these like fun quests for you to go on, which is part of the reason why I loved something that was implemented during Mythos, and I'm going to love see progress throughout the rest of the seasons if they make a return for lore, and that is the adventure cards. These adventure cards were something that you could stop by, swing by the Kettle Cafe, and pick those up. Lovely, lovely merchandise. Of course, I collected them each time they released. I bought like 6 packs of each, which was really good because the Mythos adventure cards have been retired for lore. You cannot get them again. So another reason perhaps to come frequently. But the adventure cards were really interesting in regards to the fact that I think they were kind of like a good tutorial to the park. They were more than a scavenger hunt. They invited people to engage, such as earn a piece of gold, ask Orin or the pirates about a time when a knot saved their lives, gain the trust of one of the goblins. And so they introduce this new mindset and help you kind of, track your progress throughout Mythos, throughout Evermore.
I personally got stuck on adventure card number 4, which was get a bullseye because I am trash at archery. But I did get it eventually. As I was leveling up from 5 to level 7, it was kind of disappointing to me to see that that difficulty didn't go up, right? There was no... I mean, yeah, I got stuck on that because it was my skill and whatnot, but there was no real difficulty increase from level 1 to level 7. You just had to interact. And I think it would be really cool, especially as they try to see what purpose these levels gain, whether that is interaction, whether that is the unlocks, I don't know, special character interactions or special information just for level 7s. I don't know. But it would also be very interesting to see how those level increases were to get more difficult and how that would be more rewarding and how they would do that.
And I am totally there with you, Chandler, on the sort of like the level scaling didn't really felt like it was all there yet. So hopefully that's something that will change in the future. I think that's something that, that we can hopefully look forward to. Fingers crossed. Sometimes looking at the cards, it was like, okay, it kind of looks like they built out their scavenger quest for Mythos season, and then they just broke it up into the adventure cards. They phrased them differently, I felt like, the scavenger quests in the past, but I think overall, the greatest benefit was just the positive framing of how to better interact with things. But yeah, I would say the like largest critique that I would have of them is just that a lack of difficulty scaling. And then as well, it almost felt like it didn't matter that I was a higher level than somebody else. You know, like And maybe I didn't use that title enough. I didn't engage with the adventure cards in the right way to sit, to talk to this character, say, hey, I am a champion of Evermore. I am a level 7. You know, they might think, well, what do you mean level 7? But it's a cool way of tracking progress through the park. I'm excited to see what happens with it. So hopefully during lore, it'll see some good development.
Right. I mean, especially because so many of these people that are coming to the park have experience with video games. I heard multiple times people say, well, now that I'm a level 3, now that I'm a level whatever, what does that get me? Right. We've experienced leveling up. We love leveling up. That's a goal that we want to do. But what do I do with it? What does that get me? And how do I interact with it? Do I show my level 7 card? Do I need to bring up, like, prove and have them bring up my name in the computer? Like, how does that work exactly? So I agree. I'm excited to see where it goes.
I think I'm really interested in that as well, to see what happens. I'm personally attached to kind of the idea of, like, showing your level. And maybe the adventure cards could be framed in a way it's like, hey, there's a lot of people that come through these portals, and maybe not all of them can help Evermore. So the townsfolk have devised a testing grounds of sorts, a test that people have to go through. And if they succeed and gain the level 7 or test, they're like, oh, awesome, you're at this level of ability, so we can trust you this much. So if you reach top level, they know that they can trust you a lot more.
I just got this, like, little light bulb go over my head when you were talking. Like, when I think of, like, the citizens of Evermore want to prove your trustworthiness, that sounds like a citizenship test to me. That would be really, really interesting if these adventure cards didn't turn into adventure cards, they turned into citizenship cards. I am going to have trouble saying that word over and over again, so I'm just going to say C cards. Like, wouldn't that be interesting, and wouldn't that be cool, and also a really good way for the park to give authority to world walkers by saying, I'm a citizen level 1 or a citizen level 2, citizen level 5, right? And then the higher you go, the more trust and heart the characters can give you, right?
Interesting. Yeah, really making you a part of the story, wanting you to enter the story and be not just a visitor, but someone who really cares and is active in this world. Definitely.
And I think we've spent a lot of time chatting about them, and they're great. If you get the chance to go during lore, take a look to see how they've developed.
They're beautiful.
They are so beautifully designed and have a wonderful chunk of what could be described as fluff text, but it is very much going back to kind of our earlier conversation of combining the things that they learned during Lore and Aurora. They really have built out this world, and that helps with that on those adventure cards.
Absolutely. So kind of moving forwards, we chatted briefly about the actors' interactions a little bit earlier with the adventure cards, but just in general, the actors this season were fantastic. Plenty of new folks, plenty of new groups of individuals that we got to interact with. What are some that stand out to you guys?
Favorite moment for me, physiology, dragon physiology with Aiden. That was awesome. And I loved that. That's personal favorite.
I got to check off a thing on my Evermore bucket list, which was having the roving acting troupe named after me. That was amazing. They were for a short amount of time because I was quickly outbid, but they were Chandler's charming, charismatic characters. For short. we had them change the naming there so we could get it to all sound good. And that was just a really special moment because, I mean, I got my picture taken, I checked it off on my bucket list, and I had this amazing relationship with these roving acting members.
I think a highlight for me was definitely the return of the Knights of Mythos, and specifically one knight in particular, Lieutenant Commander Sir Kalairi. I loved every interaction with her. She was so fantastic, and it was just a pure joy to go and also just hear her yelling from halfway across the park. I'm like, yeah, get him good.
I think that's one reason why he loved it most was when I got yelled at.
Oh, so funny.
Oh man.
I mean, Sir Aran is so amazing as well, but she just, Sir Kalairi let me have it when I even suggested that there might be someone that in the town that she has a romantic ties to.
She is not interested in romance. She has a steadfast dedication to duty.
And it was amazing.
The knights are basically nuns. Just think of them like that.
I mean, they just have a responsibility, and they don't need to have a man or a woman to make them whole. They are amazing characters in their own right.
Just like a nun.
Another top favorite for me has gotta be those merchants. Gotta be those awesome, charismatic merchants. Rooster and Benjamin is who I'm talking about, and I love them both. I think the first time I met Rooster, I was just blown away by the actor's ability to just get on the cuff with someone, just go back and forth, this improvisation that was just like, oh man, he's just so quick with the tongue. Like, he really embodies a
slime ball.
Yeah.
You monster.
Legitimate businessman.
Rooster just embodies a perfect, cunning, slick-tongued merchant, the kind that you would imagine in a fantasy world. And it was so fun to ever talk to him, to ever talk, like, meet with him, sell something to him. Every time I met with Rooster and Benjamin, even Benjamin did great. Both of those guys, always a good time.
Right, and I like the role that they filled, right? This, hey, we are merchants, we will give you gold. And so it was a lot easier to get gold during the season. We had so much gold. But we were able to put it to good use and do a lot of things with it. And that was a lot because we sold gift certificates and free coupons
to Culver's.
Yep. If you're ever in Utah, check out Culver's. Delicious burgers and cheese curds.
And we sold them a coupon of the cheese curds, and it was just amazing to get that gold and have that interaction with a wonderful character there.
And Goldie, if you ever hear this out in the distance, out in the far lands of Mythos, we hope that you got your golden armor built, because that is where we gave our gold. We dumped it on Goldie. She's a knight. She's a knight.
Literally filling her outreached hands, filled them to the brim, where she had to get help to even carry it away. It was amazing.
Yes, Goldie is now a delightful fairy knight.
It was pretty incredible. So there were plenty of new characters and some returning characters like Kaderan, but we saw him in his new sort of healed form, and we got to see his transformation over the course of the season of Mythos.
And what interesting interactions those were. I mean, we had a character, this was the first time that we had a character who was in a previous season, but he has now changed and is actually a person that walks around and remembers and has their own backstory other than just, I'm going to give you a name, right? So what an interesting take on that we got to see the same character reformed and actually have a new actor who brought such an amazing spirit and portrayal of that character that was true to everything that we saw during lore. This nice, kind person who was ancient and magical in all ways.
And it was also really fun to see his interactions with Faldo, for instance, because back during lore, Kaderan was, you know, real spoopy, real giant, tall, fey king person, and Faldo was upset with him, understandably, but with the new transformation and Kaderan being changed into this more human form, this more normal form, Faldo and Kaderan had a wonderful relationship, and it was wonderful to see them interact and to see how much that Faldo cares about his real, real good boy, Kaderan.
It was a really sort of heartwarming thing to see a lot of their interactions, but I was like, hey, wow, like this is a fantastic depiction of friendship between these two characters. Like, wow, I can really feel like they've known each other, not just for a year or two, but for hundreds, potentially even thousands of years. Like they had a really cool bond that I really enjoyed seeing throughout their interactions at the park.
Same with Jardani and Kaderan. I mean,
absolutely.
They fought and bickered, especially at the end, and they fought as though they had been friends for hundreds of years, and very much like old friends, they fought like no one else could. They kind of said some personal attacks and different things, but as a whole, they remained friends. So it was just very interesting and very amazing to see these characters embody, or rather these actors embody these characters to the fullest.
And I think getting around to that, just saying that constantly and time again, and especially in Mythos, what keeps us coming back is that we love these character interactions. We love these actors and the way that they're able to portray all these amazing and varied and deep characters.
And even portraying two characters at the same time.
Just spectacular.
So you had Bobby Cody doing Dimitri and Jardani, keeping those identities separate and keeping the tension and the emotion high. You had the fairies who were literally crying at the end of the season because you felt it. It was literal, in your heart.
Literal tears.
Not figurative tears.
Literal, like streaming down their face. Amazing. And to Wyatt, to point out, it wasn't just Bobby who was portraying this new character, Dimitri. It was multiple people portraying the same character, having similar accents, and doing everything the way he would. So these amazing characters, or these amazing actors, not only had to portray their own character, but this new character that someone else had developed. And it really just spoke to their talents as actors to bring this on and to make it something that we could enjoy time and time again.
And I think that depth of character leads back into the wonderful community building and the activities that they do in regards to that, such as the mayoral election that went on. It was so difficult to choose for a mayor because there was just legitimate depth to each of these characters. I'm like, well, they'd be good in one area, but not the other. And who do you know? Who do I want to know? But I think suffice it to say in regards to all this, it was amazing the impact that we felt that we had in regards to
totally.
Who we chose.
100%. People who had never come before, I know Wyatt, your family actually quite enjoyed the mayoral election and figuring out that. I do know that some people were like, why would I want to deal with real life things in a fantasy world. Why would I want that? But I think it brought this lovely community interaction that we were able to choose on for the most part.
Absolutely. So the actors were amazing, but I think they were able to shine brightest, not just because of their talents and abilities and skills, but literally because of where they were and sort of like the frame of things around them, the theme, the ambiance. I think Mythos did an exceptional job this season. But what are your guys' thoughts on that?
In regards to like the set design and the design, like that?
The way that Mythos developed in terms of those things.
I think definitely, of course, as always, the actors, like you were saying, Dan, are backdropped by the set, and the set really creates that mood. And I think the decorations and the lighting and the like mountain loads of new trees and plants brought into Mythos really brought a new atmosphere to the park and to these interactions.
Yeah, it was becoming a spring wonderland full of tree, full of green life and greenery. It would have been nice to have those trees and plants actually planted it in the ground before the park opened, but I can understand that it's a new park. They're trying to grow. They're trying to get everything ready for the season with only, you know, a couple months in between each season.
Or even weeks now.
Yeah, I was actually disappointed when we first went to Mythos. I was so excited to see everything that was new. And especially with everything being lit up because the sun was up later, it was, you know, hot during the season. We got to see for the first time what wasn't done properly or wasn't finished because of the light, right? In the shadow, in the nighttime, you can kind of hide things away. But for the first time, we got to see that the trees were not planted and cords were kind of everywhere, especially as the season started out. And for me, that was actually pretty disappointing to see, kind of disrupted the illusion, the immersion. But once they got the greenery kind of worked out and they actually started adding more, it wasn't shattering. It was still kind of disappointing, but I was able to explain it away as like, oh, this is actually a town. They would have plants. Who knows? Maybe they have a gardener. We've talked about that before.
Just that one lone gardener.
Yeah, but it was kind of disappointing at first, but we were able to see a progression, and I did like that.
As well, not just looking at Evermore Park as a whole, but the costuming and the makeup and those sorts of things were also excellent this season. Any thoughts on that, my bros?
I think the one that stood out to me the most, like the best costume design for me, was everybody. You know, everybody did a good job and everybody looked good. Even Gudrun had an outfit change that looked fantastic, way better than her last outfit. But the thing that really, really got me, the thing that really like hit me in the head, was Ozzy's knuckles. When they did makeup on his knuckles to show that he had been fighting, it was so subtle but so telling. You knew that something had happened because the makeup design on his knuckles was evident, and it was beautiful. It was really, really cool effect.
But it was subtle enough to you had to be looking and ask questions about it that would lead you into further story development. I love that as well. The costuming also of Kaderin, wow, it was stunning to see this character go from healthy and vibrant and, you know, everything, this princely guardian of nature and of the fairies, to eventually going to what we call Cray King, right? Where he literally, his crown developed actual horns in it. And it was just amazing to see that costuming and that makeup, just the little dark kind of makeup on his veins to really make him look exhausted and weathered and everything. It was just amazing to see that as well.
And I think I especially enjoyed all of the different fairies' makeup. For instance, Ayana was, hers was like directly tied to her story, like her character story. And as well as Imelda. Imelda's changed after some events. Her eyes even changed colors. And the makeup on the fairies was always really fun and evocative for each fairy and their individual personalities. And I really enjoyed the attention to detail.
Yeah, costume was great. Costume design was fantastic. Beautiful.
And other things that added to the general excellent ambiance of the park, you know, you had their fantastic music. It felt like it was a lot easier to hear the music throughout the park. I don't know if they set up more sound systems or stronger sound systems, but I felt as though wherever I was in the park, if I chose to listen to it, I'd be able to hear some music playing in the background, something to give a little more than just white noise, or more than like traffic outside and things like that. It was a impressive thing for me.
I really enjoyed the music throughout the park as well, because it seemed to me, at least, that depending on the region you were in as well, the music would be different.
Yeah.
Such as up at the mausoleum. If you're up at the mausoleum, it's playing the more creepy music that they have at Evermore. If you're down by the fairies, it's a bit more lighthearted. It's a bit of the fun, magical. And I get that that's not realistic, but I enjoy that as me personally. It really like sets me in the mood of the area that I'm in and the kind of experiences that can go on there.
They also introduced a new sound system with mics and things like that, so you could hear the tableaus that were happening. They weren't perfect.
Yeah,
they needed work.
Quote unquote hear during the tableaus. It still felt as though like there were some tableaus that they would have mic'd up. But even then, they felt pretty difficult to hear. Again, it's just one of the difficulties of having this outside space. So that's a difficulty. But then as well, there were a lot of tableaus that weren't ever mic'd, that were, you know, if you weren't right in on it, you were missing out on big chunks of information just because of the human meat shielding. You weren't going to be able to hear all of it.
Yeah, I do love that they are trying, though, to get that out more. And hopefully, and I'm sure they are going to improve it throughout into the future. And I'm really excited for that.
All righty. So we've talked a whole lot about the ambiance and things that made the park super special. We just wanted to end up with one more point before we kind of go on to some of the activities that were available in Evermore during the time of Mythos. And we just kind of want to shoot out some of our thoughts on the props that they were using with Syladros and the changes to the dragons.
I think I'll jump in on that. I really loved Syladros. I loved going into that room and seeing just a massive dragon laying on a pile of gold. I think as always, I'd love more dragon. I would have loved if Syladros had woken up from hibernation and we could like interact more, even if it was kind of just like the other dragons. I get why that would be difficult, but I still just really enjoyed going in there. It's a great backdrop to have conversations with Gudrun or with the dragon trainers or Professor Beaumont. I thought that was a pretty exceptional.
A wonderfully designed and looking thing. I agree with you, Skylar. I loved also that they created a species of dragon that was unique to Evermore Park. I've never heard of an underground dragon that whose wings actually were curling inward and kind of weren't really used. I loved that. I actually loved it that I was able to kind of forget in many instances that it was just a sound recording of some of a sleeping dragon. I oftentimes would walk in there and be like, he's going to wake up.
I have to be quiet.
And that was wonderful. I definitely agree with Skylar. I think, especially as we saw the early advertisements and things about Mythos, it really felt like it was supposed to be a dragon festival. And especially going from Aurora to Mythos, it was like, dragons are everywhere. And we heard a lot about dragons from the dragon trainers, and they were always out in the forest, but never did we see them. And so really, I think as far as the dragons and the props go, I would have loved to see more, but it was a great addition, definitely.
Talking about the activities and things that were available to park goers in the park that were sometimes connected to story, sometimes not. But what were your thoughts on what Evermore was giving us in terms of, hey, you're not running around doing a quest, here's something else to do?
I think the top one for me has got to be the animal and reptile show. I had never been before Mythos season, and it ended up being one of the first things on the first day that I did at the park at Mythos was go to the animal and reptile show, and I was thoroughly impressed. I really, really loved it. It was one of my favorite things. So thumbs up from Wyatt. Go to Wings of Evermore.
And meet our good friend, the skink.
Ghost Rider.
The blue-tongued skink.
The blue-tongued skink. If it licks you, you have been blessed by the skink.
I think some of the other fun activities is that they had some new collectibles, new collectible things. You could get collectible postcards and send letters, which kind of played a part. And we've described a bit in the past about how I use that as kind of like a fishing net and the great stoppage of Evermore. And then there was also troll value cards, which I thought were very fun. They were as far as I found out and discovered, there was 9 of them, and you could combine them and turn them into like a little portrait on the back. And I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, if you want to see a really, really good picture of those 9 cards turning into one picture, you should check out our Insta page. Skylar was kind enough to post most of his collection, but most notably those 9 cards forming that one great whole picture. It's really cute. It's the two troll sisters hugging each other.
It's adorable.
Along with the story, we learned that there were a new race, the Vampyrs, and along with that, we got a new language that we were able to read, and Skylar, you were able to learn how to write quite proficiently.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate that. It was pretty fun. It's actually pretty simple, just because once it was cracked, we just learned that it was a simple, you know, one-for-one substitution. So this symbol means A, this symbol means B, and there's no lowercase, there's no capitalized, there's no like punctuation, really. So it was pretty simple to learn and pretty simple to memorize, but it is pretty fun. And so I apologize if you've ever seen some sidewalk chalk on the ground. I was most certainly writing false leads in Vampiric on the ground.
You horrible monster. That sidewalk chalk was for New Moon Festival. It was the fairy's way to celebrate, and you corrupted it with your misinformation
that the New Moon Festival is actually a ritualistic practice of intense and horrific blood magic.
I think it was actually the Dwarf Games that
the Dwarf Games.
He did both. He did New Moon and Dwarf Games.
I just was like writing, because at this time Dimitri had been exorcised from Giardani's body, and we had no idea where he was or if he was gone. So I was just like writing, Kadaren's not done yet. Dimitri will return. Dimitri rises. Skylar was here.
the only thing that I'm going to admit that I did egg Skylar on. I gave him a few leads. I know. But it was hilarious, and I loved every minute.
It was really fun. The language, the vampiric language, you can actually find in the crypts of the catacombs. If you ever want to check that out, it's really fun to learn how to decipher it and read what it says and write in it. I would love to see more of that. Seriously, I've loved the new ciphers that were coming out towards the end that were in vampiric, and I was just like, I'm useful. I can translate real time.
He's a big old nerd. He learned and was quite adept at this language, and quite impressive that he could do it real time. So it was very cool.
Well, thank you.
There you go. And Skylar, you also mentioned the ciphers. We got a lot more of those. Very interesting. These ciphers are what I assume are there to help you in trying to understand the story. There were warnings of who to trust. There were things such as Broken Blades Still Bite, that came through these ciphers. And while we don't know who is sending them, it seems to be a fun little puzzle that you can solve to help you learn more about certain things in the park and with the story. So definitely something if you have the time and the skill. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. But something very awesome that you can do while there if you are more of a puzzle logic-minded person, definitely.
And if you're not, if you're like me and you're not quite adept at analytical logic and games and riddles and puzzles, you can just sing some sea shanties. I think the introduction of sea shanties in Mythos, especially during closing, was a really, really nice touch to Mythos. It really kind of brought a liveliness and vigor to the park that I enjoyed for a while. Sometimes it got a little old for me, and sometimes they messed with the songs to like make it ever more specific. And I'm not about that. I'm a purist. But it was really, I really liked the sea shanties. I am a big fan of sea shanties. I throw a St. Paddy's Day party every year, and I bring all my friends and I make them sing shanties. So it was fun for me.
I would agree. I really enjoyed the sea shanties and singing as we would sing Leave Her, Johnny, Leave Her. So thank you, Oren, for that. I think it's super incredible. And in fact, the one night that I remember being there when they didn't sing sea shanties, it destroyed me, because the stuff that had happened that night was so heavy. I was like, at least I could look forward to sea shanties, get over there, and it's just like, nope, everyone is just sad. We are all sad. But it was also a really, really fun impact thing that happened there.
Yeah, so if you have the opportunity to stay until the end to see those, hopefully those sea shanties will continue into lore and other seasons.
And, you know, I would say with all of the activities that we've brought up, in their nature and the way that they were implemented, I think strongly work towards Evermore's maybe an unspoken goal, but I think it is one of their goals, is to develop a very strong community of people that are working together to play Evermore, to play with Evermore, to play at Evermore. The ciphers, at least for me, kind of like what Wyatt was saying, I probably couldn't solve that alone. But with the other park goers, with my friends, with this new family that I've been able to make at Evermore, those things become crackable and very fun to engage with and to see people working through. And like when you see somebody succeed at cracking the code, you feel general excitement for them. They did it. Now we all benefit. How cool. It's a communitarian kind of a thing. When one person succeeds, we all get to succeed. That's kind of a fun thing to see with the park. And in addition to building that community, or rather I should say like as a part of building that community, two of the activities that they brought up over the course of the Mythos season, the New Moon Festival and the Dwarf Games, I think excelled really well at making sure that everyone was working towards a similar goal, bringing not just the townsfolk together, but literally every single world walker to the park to engage in these big activities. Thoughts on that, my dudes?
I personally really enjoyed the New Moon Festival. Mm-hmm. I think it was a very fun holiday type event. It was basically, in my mind, it was the weekend just after the 4th of July. And so in my mind, it was basically like, hey, what's an event that we can make for 4th of July? And I really enjoyed it because it was like a new holiday to learn about. It was still kind of basically like, let's be happy, let's get some things going on. And then there was some fun New Moon specific quests that were entertaining. And then at the end of the night, there was fireworks and they were spectacular. Just as spectacular as the New Year's Eve fireworks, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, especially since this time the fireworks were in time, accompanied with music. I don't remember if the New Year's Eve one was. I don't think it was, but yeah, but the Mythos ones, the New Moon Festival ones, had like a soundtrack that went along with them of Evermore's original soundtrack score, and it was beautiful and fantastic to watch.
Yeah, I really liked New Moon Festival. I think what I would have liked to see more was more lore behind the festival. I think what got me into New Moon Festival the most was Sir Kalairi's history with New Moon Festival and how it was her favorite time of the year, because that was the time she got together with her family and they did holiday traditions. I would have liked to see more of that integrated into the park rather than, it's a New Moon Festival, here's a story, kind of. I personally was a little weirded out because when I was doing the New Moon quest, it was a little disconnected from character to character that I was going to, but it was a fun quest. I did not enjoy myself, but it was just, there is something more to be desired there.
So perhaps a step in the right direction for world building with these other portal worlds and everything, but maybe a little bit more world building needs to happen and preparation for these events. I think that's kind of what we saw also with the Dwarf Games, right? This was kind of a field day, a just collection of games that anyone could participate in, and you could gain points for your chosen faction, for your chosen characters. There was anyone from the executioners to the dragon trainers, and everyone kind of had their own flag, which were beautifully designed by World Walkers, and that was an amazing thing that Evermore did. They had a contest of who could design their faction's banners. But I think what we saw was great world building, great idea, some execution problems that would be helpful or could be solved by preparation, right? By having a little bit more hands on deck and not one person or a couple people handling so many processes, right?
Yeah, amen.
I also think that kind of went back in my mind for me, the fact that the sound system with the microphones wasn't working quite right. I really, really couldn't hear what the MC was saying the majority of the time on the sound system. So I wasn't sure what to do, and it kind of just added to the chaos.
And oftentimes it was the troll sisters who speak in such a high tone that it was very difficult for me to understand them on this loudspeaker. Love the characters, love that tone outside of a speaking on a you know, speaker system, but definitely not pleasant to hear on this loud system that you couldn't understand what they were saying.
I did think the games were pretty fun, though. I participated in a few of them, and they were really fun. They added like a sense of just like a game feel, you know. It was just, yeah, it was a field day, and it was really fun kind of in the idea. It gave me the same like fuzzy feels as when I was at like elementary school and the whole class had that like big parachute, the rainbow parachute. Does anyone ever do that? You'd like throw it up in the air and you'd all like sit underneath
it. Yeah.
Not something that's done now, but if you're old enough to remember that, yes.
I think another thing about the troll games that I really, really appreciated was at the end, they had the guilds come up and get awarded by what guild
clan.
Yeah, clan's a better word. Mm-hmm. What clan won the festival games, like what won the dwarf games. But it was really fun because the MCs, the dwarves, had the clans pick out a World Walker champion for each of the clans that won. So like third place, they got to pick a World Walker, second place World Walker, first place World Walker. But it was really, really cool because I was just like chilling at school one day and someone came up to me, I can't remember who, and they're like, "Hey, you're a big Evermore guy." And I'm like, yeah, I do a podcast. And they're like, "Oh, fun. My friend was the champion for the Fairies clan, so-and-so." I'm like, yeah, I heard her name called in the, whoa, connections. So it made it big, right? It made it real to me. It was really cool.
That's really cool. I didn't know that the clans did that. What an amazing way to bring in World Walkers to celebrate their winning, right? It wasn't just about the characters, but both the World Walkers and the Everfolk are celebrating together. That's really cool. I like that.
So guys, I gotta tell you, I'm hungry. I'm hungry for some Evermore food and merch. can you guys satiate my ravenous hunger?
You know, we cannot, but the amazing chefs over there at Evermore can. Oh my goodness, there were so many delicious things going on, new foods that we saw for the first time, and it really felt like a menu had been established a steady menu, right?
Yeah, they were. It was really delicious. They had different kinds of fries. They had pork sliders. They had bratwurst. They had. I'm trying to think of everything. There was a lot, and it was all very delicious.
Nachos.
Many types of nachos.
Yeah.
And then they had different and unique foods at other parts of the park. So you had to travel around the park to get other kinds of foods. They did a, I'm gonna butcher this. They did like a cilantro lime, spicy shrimp that they did.
That was delicious. That was on a skewer.
That was over, like, it wasn't at the main Barter West. It was at somewhere else. And then they did a teriyaki chicken at one place. Like you had a lot of variety, and you had to explore the park in order to get that food variety, which, one, love food variety. I'm always a big fan. But two, like, way to scatter people throughout the park instead of having them be congested at one spot. Although there was still a lot of congestion.
Those lines still got very congested at the very entrance, especially on some of their busiest nights. It was just kind of a pain to walk through there because you had the acting troupe and then you had the massive lines because everybody wanted that food. It was so good.
Well, this definitely breaks the immersion of, you know, being in this 18th century village or whatever. I definitely think stanchions would help just as you are there, that they are creating where the line goes. Instead of having it just kind of jut out right into the pathway, there was so much free space that they could have used that actually went back and ran along the fence, right? Where instead of being right when the walkway, like you're talking about, Skylar, there needs to be some control there instead of just everyone creating this line wherever they want.
Yeah, I think I can agree with that. It did add a bit to the chaos, but all in all, I guess like the quality of the food is worth it. It was just,
you know, definitely. This is just something, logistics. Yeah.
Well, it's even quality of food was evident in the fact that they ran out of food and drink. People couldn't get enough of the stuff that they were selling. It's a good problem to have, but nevertheless, it is still a problem. Something that I'd like more food. That'd be nice. Right. I'm a big tummy boy and I need lots of food.
Especially for those that are coming later or staying later. Like if you're there the whole time, you're going to get hungry multiple times, right? And I understand that from a logistics situation, they don't want to buy more food and have more food spoil or anything, but definitely allowing people to enjoy the park and then come later to get food. No one should have to feel like they have to rush to the food stands or else they're just out of luck, right? We want them to stay in the park for as long as they can instead of saying, well, I'm hungry, I guess it's time to leave.
Yeah, and I guess just one more thing in terms of the utilization of space that I saw kind of in the main general eating area, Barter West, Barter East, that type of a deal. I think for me, I would like to see some more tables where you can sit down at. Yeah. Like there's a lot of fine benches type of a thing that kind of like go up against the plants that are there. But I don't really like just setting all of my food around me, like on these little benches, right? And I'm like, okay, I have stuff on either side of me, got to go back from one thing, got to go to the other. I'd like to have it in front of me on a table. Consider me super posh or whatever, but I just want to fancy. And I will say they do have some tables. They've had some tables there before, and like I'm not saying that they don't have them as an option, but I think more wouldn't be a bad thing. You don't need loads more, but just some more, I think would help accommodate for the space issues that are also just inherent in whenever there's great food. Lines are going to amass. There's going to be a lot of people sitting around wanting to eat their stuff. It's just, it's a whole logistics problem.
Right.
But like, I believe in the brains behind Evermore. They'll be able to figure it out.
Yeah. And I think what aided, and especially in regards to that line processes, was actually they opened up the Kettle Cafe a little bit.
True.
And that created a line out the door as well, because it wasn't fully opened. It was just a table. And I should clarify, the Kettle Cafe and Mercantile, because this is the place where the merch was housed. And that line was also ridiculously long, because there was just some incredible merch to be had at Evermore. I was absolutely blown away at how much there was to buy. And I actually came to the problem where they finally had enough stuff that I didn't have enough money to buy it all, which makes me sad, because I want it. I want it all.
We're going to be starting a GoFundMe for Skylar for him to buy stuff at Evermore. Go ahead. Give him your money.
It's really good. I mean, this is also where the adventure cards were taking place, and buying the adventure card packs. They had guild patches, they had wands, they had wooden swords, they had dragon eggs, dragon head mounts, the adorable dragon plushies, they had backpacks, satchels, they had the journals, they had dragon eyes, like pendants, they had an art painting kit, they had the engraved Evermore horn mugs, they had so much merch, and I absolutely was blown away, and I loved it. They had their t-shirts still that were sticking around. It was just fantastic.
So before we get into our overall summary, our kind of final thoughts, criticisms, and so on, what is it going to cost somebody to go to the park? At least, what was it costing folks to go to the park during Mythos?
So the prices fluctuated a little bit. At the beginning, it was at its most expensive $30, and that was for a Saturday price, which is typically the most expensive in their pricing structure. But at the towards the middle and then the end of Mythos, that price had dropped down to $22 if you bought your tickets online ahead of time.
I think it's interesting. I mean, the park is still trying to figure itself out. It's trying to figure out pricing, what is correct, like what are people going to buy and what is too much. We obviously, as we've mentioned, we went a couple times, maybe a little bit more than a couple dozen. As Skylar and I went the most, I don't even know how many times we went.
I was actually just figuring it out. And I personally, I went over 22 times during the Mythos.
You animal. Wyatt went about half that, about 11, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, maybe 10 or 11. Yeah. I could probably count it up, but I won't.
Yeah. And then Dan, you went a couple times, correct?
I think I went about 6 or 7 times.
Okay, so still way more. I mean, in our earliest episodes, we talked about how being 3 was kind of the magic number there. First of all, were all those times worth it to you? Skylar, you went 22. Was it still worth it to go that many times?
I personally, during Mythos, would say yes. I think there was so much to be explored there in regards to a bunch of different like story ideas, that talking to each character and getting invested in each of their individual story, that there was enough intrigue for me to keep going, and it was worth it. And I would have loved to have gone every single day. I could go every single day and still get a great time out of it, because even if I'm not necessarily discovering the story that's there, I just have an enjoyable time cracking jokes, listening to music, going to the Wings of Evermore, even just like sitting and enjoying the ambiance of the park.
And then for me, this is Daniel. For me, I would say that there's at least in my experience during the 6 or 7 times, however many times I actually went, I certainly enjoyed every time that I went, but for me, sort of counter to Skylar in this instance, I want some more story. I want some more things to kind of bite my teeth down into. That's really the thing that keeps me coming back to Evermore, is the story. I want to know where it's going, what's happening. And I felt that at least with Mythos, the story that I was getting, it felt like there was a lot of information to uncover, but it all kind of felt like it was just this lateral spread of things that didn't culminate until the very last day when we finally got this last piece of information that no one was able to uncover until the very last day. And it kind of, when it was just a little bit disappointing to me to feel like, oh, there was so much breadth, but there wasn't enough depth that I could continue investigating into these other things meaningfully, at least, and perhaps it's an issue with the way that I play, an issue with the way that I ask questions and engage with the park, that I wasn't seeing story depth for me. And maybe it's just my own high expectations for what a good quality fantasy story is. But I think, at least in Mythos, I saw the sort of key issue that we've danced around from time to time, which is the idea that, you know, if somebody uncovers a crucial piece of information to the story, then it gets out there, then the park is now hindered because now all of these world walkers have this crucial piece of information that we weren't really supposed to have get out for a few more weeks. And so I think, you know, the, at least in my limited brain that I have, the way that I see the solution working is have more story, have more things to uncover, have more things where those things that people discover and share don't end your story, but amplify things up, like ramp it up when world walkers start sharing these secrets. Like, I think, at least again, with my limited time going to the park compared to my friends, like I saw some cool building of things, but I felt like it was a very slow crescendo to a finale that was fun and interesting, but at least for me, just not wholly satisfactory. I loved so much about Mythos, but I think in terms of the six or seven times that I went, I don't think I got what I was looking for as like my main objective. I got a lot of other things, which were great, and I love those things, but like the key thing, that story, I felt still it was missing something, and I still can't say 100% what would fix it. How am I supposed to know, right? But it's one of those difficult things. Loved it, but also wanted more.
Dan, I really think you have a lot of interesting thoughts, and I definitely want to get into them.
Thank you.
Here in a couple of minutes. But first, I want to hear really quickly, Wyatt, you went about 10 times. How was your experience?
Super quick. I loved it. I thought my price of admission for 10 or 11 times was worth it. Every time I went to the park, I had a good time. However, there were some moments where I thought I kind of done everything that I've wanted to do. I could leave the park early or just come for less amount of times. But whenever I went to the park, I never was bored at the park. So I always had axe throwing or archery to do or quests to figure out. But there were some moments where I could have left the park early and been just fine. Or had just not gone and went another day instead and saved up a little bit of time and money.
And as far as my experience goes, I went around the same number as Skylar. I'm not exactly sure, but what I ran into was constantly the problem with money. As I joked in the at the beginning, at the top of the episode, was how in the world did we do that? And I have a lot of debts. I have a lot of personal things going on. And while I love Evermore and definitely was able to make it happen, it was a stress. It was a sacrifice in ways that I don't think many others would be willing to do, right? Even at the end, I was like, wow, this is a lot. I don't know if I can keep coming this much. And I love Evermore. I love everything about it. I obviously want it to succeed, but what I think would definitely help with that is some sort of reward or system in place that if you to keep you coming back to enjoy the character and the story and keep everything running, basically, that you could buy some sort of season pass, right? We've mentioned this on every review episode we've had. We still have no season pass. And it makes me wonder, like, I wonder if they see you, Skylar, or other people like you, and think, well, we've got them already. Why would we offer them a cheaper? They're already buying into 22 times. Why would we offer them a cheaper option? And what would be our response to that?
Improve customer relationship. Like, just, it would be like, hey, we love you for loving us. Here's a discount. Here's a punch card. Here is a bundle. Buy 10 tickets, get one free. Like, there is, it doesn't have to be as extreme as, okay, one price gets you in for the entirety of the season. That is a lot of wasted, like, capital, right? That's a lot of money that Evermore could be using.
Which they need, because, you know, the park is only completed their first phase.
They do need a lot of money. But there are ways to improve customer relationship, save the customer a little bit of money, and also get more customers and grab more of that market share.
Yeah, my thought is this. I haven't worked through all the numbers on how any of this stuff would work. I'm not a huge numbers guy, but at least I have an understanding of how I operate. If I've gotten a good deal with a season pass or something like that, I'm going to use it, and then I'm going to ultimately be spending just as much, if not more, money while I'm at that place buying other things, because having a season pass frees up more of my money, ultimately, like in the end, to spend things on merch, to spend things on food. And if a season pass were even to provide a 10% discount in the store or at the food locations, like, you're not encouraging people to spend less. You're encouraging them to spread their spending. But they're still going to be spending.
So what you're saying is, I think I'm getting a good deal, so I will actually, in fact, spend more around the whole park.
Because ultimately, like, when I get a good deal, I'm like, okay, awesome. This means I have more money to use in other ways, right? So better deal, better Pizza Papa John's. No, better deal is ultimately going to yield more reward, at least for me, and I think as well for the park. So I say, Evermore, give us a dang season pass. Just try it out. Please.
It's interesting. Also, Skylar and I, we have essentially convinced all of our coworkers to come with us to Evermore. We brought a lot of people to the park with us. And something that we hear constantly is, if they had a pass, I would come more. And that is interesting, right? You would be spending more at one time, but if they had some kind of pass, a punch card, something, more people would come more often and get it. Explore the story that is really there.
And chances are people would not come enough times to equal the value of the season pass that they're purchasing. I sincerely believe they would be making far more net gains on a season pass than they would be elsewhere. I don't know. That's just me jumping in and interjecting, Chandler. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you're fine. But also the fact that because I would be getting a better deal, I would feel comfortable bringing even more people in that also are like, wow, this is a good deal. I will come in and bring five of my friends.
So I think we've talked a lot about a lot of our criticisms. So I think maybe just go a quick bullet by bullet, like what we've already kind of discussed a little bit in regards to the criticism that we have.
I personally would have loved to have story resolution. That is my biggest complaint, and I think a lot of people's, is that the finale night, as mentioned by Dan, was lackluster. We had this, it was fun, and we had all these people say goodbye and everything with Kadarin that he was transforming, but there was no real resolution for these amazing plot lines that we had spent so much time learning about and caring about. Now, they may be carrying those into next season, but there needed to be more, there needed to be smaller resolutions. Like, okay, so now we know who set the barn fire and why that was important. Now the next question for next season would be who was controlling those that were mind controlled, right? So more story resolution and being able to figure that out earlier on, which you talked about as well then.
I think my biggest criticism would be that a lot of the story of Mythos I felt was confined to the knowledge of one character, that character being Jardani. And it's only exacerbated by the problem that he's so gosh darn likable. And so people just want to sit there and have hour-long conversations with him. But every single thing that I'm doing, the Dimitri plotline leads back to him, the smuggling plotline leads back to him, discussing mayoral things was leading back to him, the One True Government was leading back to him. Every time I had a question that couldn't be answered, I was always being directed to Jardani, and I could just never get in to talk with him. There was seriously one day where we waited, where I specifically waited at least an hour just to talk to Jardani, and I talked to him for maybe 5 minutes, and then he just gets swarmed by people that interject into conversations, tableaus start happening. It was just really, really tough. And I love Jardani. I loved the character, loved the story that was happening, but it felt as if the linchpin to everything was hanging on the knowledge that this character had, and it was just too difficult to get to it.
One of the things that I love about the park, and one of the things that I come and do every single time I come to the park, is I go axe throwing. And one of my biggest criticisms of the park is that the axe throwing station was in disrepair. There was a lot of times where the axe handles were taped together or just straight up broken. There was times where the targets were completely destroyed and they had to wheel in new logs and stuff like that. I would have liked to see a higher standard of maintenance for the axe throwing station because it's where I spend a lot of my time at the park. But again, I understand. It's just the one thing I would have liked to seen different.
That and the archery range. Definitely those are two places that need a little bit more repair more often.
Absolutely. And just some more bullet point things that we can just quickly discuss in terms of our criticisms. There weren't really any new buildings that we were able to see and explore, and the buildings that they had that are still under construction still look very unfinished. And again, the park is growing and working on itself. But for example, the church, it is a towering building that is visible from outside of the park. It is unfinished and ultimately gives, at least me, like the first impression, like that is unfinished. This park is unfinished. That is an imperfect building. This must be an imperfect park. Why go spend my money there? Which is quickly changed when you actually go in and you experience the place. But for those passersby who just kind of quickly see it and glance at it, I worry that might turn them away or might make them think, oh, it's not ready yet, if they don't search further.
I would echo that. A lot of people are like, oh, I've seen that being built. I didn't think it was done, because they see the top of the church and just see that it's not finished being constructed.
And then in the end, ultimately, my biggest thing comes down to the idea of the park has done a great job of changing things in a reactionary way to what the park goers want and like what they're hoping for. But I think in terms of the proactive steps that could be taken to really give people more and more and more and more, like that's kind of just the word of the day for me is more. Like I think they are aware of what we want. I say that they need to kind of take these things and not just say, all right, we're doing this one thing to help change that, but we're going to do a series of things. We're going to have a solution that isn't just a one-point solution, but a full-on plan to resolve that issue entirely, not just to try it out to see if it works. I want to see more, dedication to a sincere plan to fix the issues that are in the park. And who knows what that's going to look like? I don't know. I'm just a 24-year-old boy.
And they could have that. We just aren't being...
And there's no communicated to the public, you know what?
It is just something that's like, from what I'm seeing, it's just my point of view. I could be very wrong about what I think is being done. But I guess my perception is what is something that I don't know how many other people are seeing things the way that I see them. So seeing that communication, seeing some more like public outreach and like, hey, we see what you're hoping for. This is how we're going to be responding to it. I want that.
Let's go on to some improvements. We've talked a lot about kind of what we didn't like. Now let's, what did Mythos do well?
I think that Mythos in this specific regard had a great feel of lending to an overarching story between seasons. I felt as if we got a lot of really interesting nuggets, such as, for instance, the one true government of Evermore. I feel like that's going to be an overarching three seasons plot line. I think that after Mythos, we're going to hopefully learn more about them in lore. I hope that they're revealed during lore and then Aurora becomes about defeating them with kind of the Christmas, the Dickensian holiday spirit.
I think one of a really great improvement for me that I saw in Mythos was just guest interaction, World Walker participation. You had a lot of interaction this season, especially with the banner contest, the mayoral election, dwarf games, and even whole storylines like the Giordani Dimitri storyline. That was, again, we talked earlier on, that was introduced by World Walker. So it was just a lot of the park listening, paying attention, and saying, hey, the World Walkers are doing this thing. Let's write a story. Let's make something happen here.
And you know, with everything that I've said in terms of story, I do have to acknowledge that more than any other season in the past at Evermore, there has been more. There has been more things to do. There has been more things to learn in both the main quests and the side stories. Like I have my criticisms, but I think that was still a major improvement that Mythos brought over previous seasons. And it's not just an improvement, but it's like, okay, you know, I think they're really figuring out the right direction to go. So an improvement of vision for the park is what I would say as well.
I absolutely loved the permanency of some of the activities, the bow and arrows, the archery range, and the axe throwing. Those have now become permanent places in the park that you can rely on.
And along with that, there was the guilds added into Evermore. I think that was a fantastic addition, lended to with the adventure cards as well, as that you could go and join one of these guilds or factions. I think it was a really fun thing to be able to become a squire, to be able to become a Blackheart, to be a dragon trainer, to be an elven ranger or join the rangers. I think that was a really fun interactive improvement.
Both the official guilds and the unofficial, you could actually get these character charms that were unique to these specific characters that would show that you were trusted and kind of one of few. So like the pirates had one, Giordani actually had a charm that they would be able to give to mark you as someone who was trusted, that you could go and do some really cool things with it.
Yeah, I would say, just kind of in summation with all of those things, everything that you could interact with at Evermore in the Mythos season was just better than it's been in the past. Anything you could interact with, it was going to be more fun, more interesting, just better. Lastly for me, one of the things that I loved about Mythos was the waiver was online.
That was amazing. A needed thing that actually happened. Loved it.
Because of this, I feel I have to jump right back up into a criticism real quick. Because of how many times I felt that I wanted to go to the park, if I did not come at least 30 minutes early, I was waiting about 30 minutes to 45 minutes while the park was open. And it's just a thing where I hate spending money knowing that time is eating away at that money. And I'm not getting the full value. If I wanted to go in the park and sit in the park and sit down, that's my choice. But the expedition, the expediting of the out front line is seriously needed for me. That's just my personal opinion on that.
The line situation needs to be figured out. It was a great step forward.
Yes.
For the online waiver and getting that taken care of. But you should not have to wait so long in line, and you need to be able to get through that line faster.
And the online waiver did help with that quite
correct
a bit.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess since I had to bring us down, I'll try and bring us back up a little
thanks
bit.
Thanks.
No, you're good. You're good. You're good.
I would say that in regards to the expansions, the landscaping at Evermore Park, the greenery, the plant life, it was just every single time we went, it kept looking better and better and better and better. And really, in my mind, aided me in my sense of like fantasy environment, authentic nature environment. It's very beautiful, very, very pretty, and absolutely worth just taking a look at all the hard work that goes into their gardening.
And I just have to say this one more time, the amazing actors that bring this place to life, that to me was the strongest part of Mythos, was these amazing storylines that were created and sometimes aided by Worldwalkers were really brought to life by the actors. And so we cannot say thank you enough to those actors that we interacted with all those times. Thank you for keeping us entertained, for staying in character and being amazing, and really the part that I look forward to the most when I go to Evermore. And I think that's it, kind of to wrap it up.
We did it.
You know, Mythos is wrapped up. So let's wrap. I think I'm just going to wrap it up, kind of what I understood to be our take. I personally felt like Mythos was Evermore flexing their creative muscles in storytelling, figuring out this new way to tell stories and that looked different. So there were some growing pains, there were some negatives, but in my mind, those were small compared to the amazing storytelling and acting we saw. We were definitely talking a lot about the negatives about being in other areas, the ticketing, the food running out, and kind of that. I think that now that Evermore has such a strong story base and as flexing their creative muscles, maybe we need to see a little bit more logistic help as far as getting lines through faster, and some of which will break the immersion. But I think that's kind of where I would like to see the improvements happen.
I think I can echo along with that. I think we get really nitpicky in our criticisms, I think, because Definitely. They're making steps in the right direction. It's just still trying to figure out where to channel that specifically. And I think that they are getting stronger with each and each season that goes on. And even throughout each season, they are increasing in quality, in participation, in experience. And even some of those quality of life things, Chandler, that you mentioned were getting better, such as the online waiver and having a wider variety of food, having it spread out. I think it's just, you know, it's kind of a slow burn, and it's hard to be patient about that. But I definitely think they are improving and working on some great things.
Absolutely. As they race to make all of these amazing changes and add so much new content and just innovate on what a fantasy interactive theme park can be, like to me, they are the first of its kind, really. And so there are the growing pains, there are the difficulties, but ultimately in the end, it's just promising, right? We are forever looking forwards to what they're going to be putting out. Like every new thing, regardless of whether or not it's great or bad, we still are going to go and in our own ways love it, because that means, you know what, they're trying. They're trying something new. They're trying something to make the park a better experience for them, for us, and everything. And if they make a misstep, you know what? We've said it once. We'll say it again. They're good at changing course to help us, to help themselves. So whatever negatives there were in the Mythos season, you know what? Some of them might continue on into lore. Who knows? But they're going to be figuring out the slow burn is at least burning, you know. Mm-hmm. They're working forwards, and we're still waiting for that chugga 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 choo choo. But you know what?
Can't wait.
Just like any train, you know, when it gets into the station, it's gonna be such a sweet experience, and that's Evermore. You know, we're on this wonderful ride. Who knows when it's gonna get into the station of being where it needs to be perfect and complete. But until then, we're just chugga chugga chewing along. I don't know why. Do you have any last thoughts or remarks?
I don't think I do. I think you guys kind of nailed it.
So with that, we just want to say thank you for listening to what could be a 17-parter episode. Really, this fantastic experience for us of looking back at Mythos, and hopefully for you to be able to look back at Mythos yourselves to think, what were the things I loved? What were the things I wish would have improved? We would love to hear back from you. So reach out to us, reach out to the park. Again, we appreciate you. We appreciate your feedback and listening. We appreciate all your input and your reviews. It helps us out a ton, because like the park, we want to be able to improve, not just for ourselves as content creators, but for you as the folks that are hopefully enjoying and devouring our content.
And I would like to jump on this as well and say thank you. Thank you so much, Evermore Park. Thank you so much to all of the logistics teams, the writers, the executives, the actors, and the security guards, and everyone, and the food vendors, the ticketing attendants, the makeup artists, the costume creators, just the prop makers. I want to say thank you, Evermore. Thank you for putting so much love and affection into everything that you do, and making the experience worth it every single time that we go. I personally appreciate that, and I'm sure that we all appreciate that, including the entire Evermore community.
Yeah, I think it really was self-evident, the love and care that the team put into the park and that we got to enjoy.
A reminder to follow the park and things going on at evermore.com, as well on their Instagram at Evermore Park.
Won't you follow us on Facebook and Instagram with our handle at World Talkers.
You can call in at 801-332-9321. We would love to hear your voice and your experiences and opinions on what you thought Mythos was and what the strengths and weaknesses were.
Email us at worldtalkers.podcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you liked about Mythos. Let us know what you didn't like about Mythos or Evermore Park in your visit. If you just want to put a shout out to an awesome actor that you love, if you just want to say how much you want to love Evermore, we'd totally love to accept that as well.
And leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. They are one of the biggest platforms for us. It makes a big difference for our own visibility, not just there, but on other platforms as well. And if you ever see me in the park, come and give me a big old hug. I want to embrace you, let you know that you are loved and cared for. And with that, we'll be seeing you
beyond the portal.